Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
We have two guests tonight. First is Max Rubin, wit, raconteur, and host of the annual Blackjack Ball, which was recently held in Las Vegas. Also joining us is a man named Smoke, who is a star performer at the ball. Before we talk about the Blackjack Ball, there was some interesting casino news. A casino in eastern Pennsylvania, the Sands Bethlehem, felt obliged to make a public announcement that they had no snakes on their property. Players and casino employees excluded, I suppose. I've never heard of a casino in this country thinking they needed to make such a public relations announcement. What do you make of this, Richard?
I just had to laugh when I read the story. Apparently, it was one of these rumors that flew around on Facebook and things like that. Somebody apparently had started it saying they had been bitten by a snake at the casino. And all I could picture was, Samuel L. Jackson. I'm sure we'll see, internet memes of Samuel Jackson talking about, I can't say what he said about the plane, about how he didn't like snakes on the plane. Now it'll be in the casino.
All right. Max, does this strike you as a future question at a blackjack ball?
It sure does, because it'd be a great thing to just bring up and say, hey, what were those snakes? Were they pit bosses? Were they advantage players? Wherever the hell they may happen to have been. When you said that, I just started laughing about it when I read your question this morning. I hadn't heard it yet, but one of the greatest PR announcements I've ever heard. I've seen one about bed bugs, too, but that hit a little close to home. I had never seen one about snakes. That was awesome.
Smoke, were you one of the snakes who weren't at the Sands Bethlehem?
No, I wasn't. I wish I could say I was there, but I just want to know if, they came up through the toilet, because I've heard stories about that. And that would be, if that was the rumor, that'd be a pretty interesting story right there.
Yeah, it'd make you look before you, whatever. All right. Those of you who listened to last week's show heard Michael Shackelford say what a good bet the no safety was on the Super Bowl, even though 3 out of the last 4 years had a safety. Well, make it 4 out of 5, as the first offensive play was indeed a safety. This is a bet where you bet a lot to win a little. You usually win, but when you lose, you feel it. For the last several years, I've piggybacked on Shaq's bet, but this year I didn't for a variety of reasons. My condolences go out to Shaq and anyone else who lost that bet this year, and my congratulations to myself for avoiding that fiasco. Smoke.
How about the guy at the Aria that bet $500 that the first play of the game would be a safety and picked up $25,000?
That was That was pretty good, and I actually heard Mark Cuban who owns the Dallas Mavericks made a couple orders of magnitude bigger than that on that bet. I thought that was kind of strange.
He bet that too? I hadn't heard that one.
Smoke, you bet sports. Did you have no on the safety?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go crazy on it. I did lose a lot of money. Fortunately, I made money overall during the game, but that was a very painful way to start the game.
Yes.
And it's just an uphill. You know, anytime you start a game and it's an uphill battle from that point, it feels like the world's against you, but fortunately everything turned around and I won most of my bets and everything turned out good.
All right.
Well, I had the prop that the first score would not be a run or a pass. that would be a field goal, kickoff return, or a defensive touchdown, or a safety, and that paid about even money. So that turned out to be pretty nice. I like the way the game started.
All right. Now, there was some news this week about Atlantic City players getting some unexpected W-2Gs. Now, W-2Gs are typically given to slot players when they get jackpots of $1,200 or higher. Richard, what do you know about this?
Yeah, it was the article I saw said that they were giving W-2Gs to roulette players that hit payoffs of over $1,200, which is just awful. I mean, I'm sure players are really mad about this when it starts happening, and hopefully they're going to do something about it. But it just, I mean, if you're going to tag a roulette player who has a payoff over $1,200, I mean, if you bet $50 straight up on a number, it pays $1,750. But if you bet $500 on a bet that pays, eight to one or something, or less than that,
even three to one,
$200 on a corner, are they going to W2G those people, or $1,750
on the
right?
It's about $1,750 on the columns.
Anyway, I just think this is a really terrible idea, but hopefully they'll do something about it and change it.
Was this live table games, or was this the online Atlantic City, Richard? Do you know?
It was at the online casino.
Uh-huh. All right. That seems like a good way to cure them from getting too many customers.
Unfortunately, most citizens, most civilian gamblers, don't protest enough, in my opinion, and I wish they would protest more like that. You usually have to have an advantage player come in there and protest something like that.
Well, it's interesting that happened, because it may be because the online isn't based upon a live game, and if it's based on an RNG, which in casinos, any game which is based on an RNG, you have to file the W-2G.
Really? So if you have like one of those video blackjack machines that if say it allowed you to bet $1,000 and you hit a blackjack, you would have to W-2G them for that?
No, if it hit over $1,100 though, $1,199.
No, I mean if they bet $1,000 and get a blackjack, it pays $1,500.
Probably. It sounds like that's probably their logic, if that's what was happening.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're probably trying to protect themselves because they don't want a ruck to run afoul of the regulatory authorities back in New Jersey, who are just basically insane the way they're so punitive when someone does make a mistake. So if you're going to err, you err in the favor of the regulators and sort it out later. In most instances, not at Revel, of course, but in most instances. Anybody know where that stands right now? As far as the cash back on your video poker and slot losses, Bob?
Well, that's over. It was if you collected all 20 weeks, that ended sometime in November. So that particular promotion is over, and they've changed management since then. And last I heard, Caesars was thinking about buying them. They're trying to sell it. That promotion probably will dump them into bankruptcy again. So it's a mess. It's a lovely casino. It would be an upgrade if Caesars closed one of the next door and went to the Revel, because Revel is a luxury property and some of the other properties there are not.
Well, they should be for long if Caesars more owns debt.
All right, now we've been hearing from our guests. Let's go ahead and introduce them properly. Max Rubin claims to be the undisputed overweight comp champion of the world. Max has worked for casinos, consulted for them, and has been a professional player. He's appeared on television numerous times. His book, Comp City, is must reading for advantage players who play any game. He's one of our favorite guests on the show. Max Rubin, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hi, guys. Sorry I'm having this conversation on speakerphone in a car because I got stuck in a little bit of traffic. It was raining, and we left Los Angeles. I was up at the Bicycle Club at about 3:30 today, and we're just now pulling into Los Angeles. I'm sorry, into San Diego. And I have a shift manager from Barona sitting with me in the car named Andrew, and I told him this is the closest he's ever going to get to the blackjack ball since we're talking about it. So, Andrew, welcome to the show, and this is as close as you're going to get. And
thanks a lot, Max.
Yeah. They love it at Barona when they say, hey, let's sponsor that thing. Yeah, but you can't come.
All right, now.
You can come to the ball if you're Barona.
Now we have another guest, Smoke. He was originally a dealer at a small, dumpy place, and he gambled, and he lost. And so he decided he better learn something. So he checked out every book and gambling book in the library he could find, looked at every resource on the internet, and basically taught himself. Currently, he successfully plays blackjack, poker, and sports betting. Smoke, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. I'm a big fan of the show. I listen almost every week, and looking forward to being on and talking about a lot of things here.
Good. Now, the 18th annual Blackjack Ball was held someplace in Greater Las Vegas a few weeks ago. More than 100 people who either are or were among the best blackjack players in the world were invited, along with a few gambling lawyers, gambling experts in other field, and one radio co-host. Max, briefly, how did the Blackjack Ball originally come about?
Well, in short, it was, Muskin will remember, long, long ago in the mid-90s, there was a place called the MGM Grand, which didn't have Griffin Detective Agency or any other protective modes of keeping the pros out. And anytime they had a big event, such as New Year's Eve or a fight, every pro that we knew and a lot of pros we didn't know would show up. And we'd start banging in on each other's games. We'd come in on other team signals. Everybody kind of got to know each other. Some were a little friendlier than others. And one night after one of the big fights, a lot of the guys got together, and it dawned on me that maybe somebody ought to put together some kind of party where all these pros that come from all across the country in the world, in fact, should have a safe house and a place to get together at some point to have a party so you could just swap tales and share stories and talk about plays and just get to know each other in a social setting where you felt safe. And so I told my wife, I've got a really good idea. We're going to have a party at my house on January 2nd, and you're going to cook for, I've invited 38 people, and they're going to bring champagne, and we're going to have a big event. What do you think?
Joanna's a saint, actually.
Pardon me?
She's a saint.
Yes, well, and she did, and she cooked for the whole group, and that was the first blackjack ball of which Richard Munchkin came, Anthony Curtis, and Wally. Those three made the final stable at our competition, and strangely enough, last year at the 17th, it was the same three guys at the final stable again.
All right.
And it evolved from there with 38 people to the biggest one, had almost 120, and 120 is just unmanageable, so I've had to pare down the invitee list a bit. So now we usually land around 104.
All right, Smoke, how many blackjack balls have you been at?
I've been to three, I believe. The first one I attended, I thought it would be a funny joke. I brought, and you're supposed to bring some, you know, nice comped wine. Now everyone plays rated these days, so they can't get a comp, but I brought in some bum wine, some Mad Dog 2020 to the ball to just see Max's reaction. He looked pretty confused, but then I had, in my bag, I had some real champagne as well, so.
Good.
That was kind of fun.
No Thunderbird for you anymore, huh?
No Thunderbird.
Okay. Like, now, one of the highlights of the ball is the election of one person every year to the Blackjack Hall of Fame. Munchkin and Max are already members of the Hall of Fame. I never will be. Smoke, well, not yet, but who knows? The winner this year was Gambling with an Edge frequent visitor, lawyer Bob Nersessian. Runner-up was Diamond Mike, who's also been on the show a couple times. Personally, I was delighted that Bob Nersessian won. Were any of the three of you surprised or disappointed that he won?
I was not surprised or disappointed. I thought he was a really great candidate and very deserving. I mean, not that he's a player, but he's certainly affected professional blackjack players, all players, I mean, in a big way, and policies of the way players are treated, especially in Las Vegas, have changed dramatically because of him.
Yeah, and one of the primary criteria for being in the Hall of Fame is either having had phenomenal success in the field as a player or making contributions to the craft, and he's made as many contributions to the craft in the last decade as anybody, maybe more than anybody.
All right.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I voted for him. I was happy to see him win.
One of the highlights of the evening is a 21-question test that everyone takes to determine five finalists who compete to win the coveted Gross Gene Cup. Second place gets the somewhat smaller Munchkin Award. James Gross Gene and Richard Munchkins are the only two people to have won first place three times and are now disqualified from future competitions. They're compensated for this by having their names on the awards and are encouraged to submit questions from hell for the rest of us to try to figure out. Before the competition, there's a Calcutta. Now, Calcutta is an auction where the attendees bid on who's going to win the event. The actual money collected goes to whoever buys the player in the Calcutta, not to the player himself. Although each player has the right to buy back at least half of whatever he went for in the Calcutta, should he so desire. Some do, some don't. Now, Max is the auctioneer of the Calcutta. He attempts to make every player sound like they can walk on water in order to drive the prices up while simultaneously cracking jokes and insulting random players in the process. The Calcutta is fun. Now, Max, I'm wondering how many of your insults are ad-lib spur of the moment and how many are well-crafted jokes?
Well, I'd have to say at least none of them are well-crafted jokes.
at least twice that many, yeah.
But maybe twice that many. Twice as many as none. Generally, no. I look at who the players are, and I just try to kind of play on the spur of the moment and see what their reactions are and who's there. And just I've always found that I do a much better job if I just let it kind of flow when I get on the mic. Now, sometimes I may say something that hurts somebody's feelings, which has happened probably more than once at every single blackjack ball, but it tends to be funnier that way than something that I might sound canned and a little bit too contrived. So I just kind of pick up the mic and start winging it.
All right. Now, on the test of 21 questions, the first one always appears to be a true-false question about Barona Casino, who hosts the blackjack ball.
And well, sometimes it's a fill-in-a-blank where the answer is Barona.
It's one of the two, and I use that just in case someone ever happened to stop by Barona and say, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to play at Barona, and I keep all of the scorecards with their names on them. And I'll say, really? Well, you know what? 2 years ago, you signed a scorecard, and you wrote in, what casino will I not play out of respect for sponsoring the Blackjack Ball and Max? And you wrote Barona. What are you doing here? Now, I've only had to pull that card twice, and those two people have never come back to the ball. No one who's been to the Blackjack Ball has been to Barona as a player and been picked off as a player since 1999. So most of the people, everybody else honors their commitment to not play at Barona in order to be an invited guest at the Blackjack Ball. It's a worthwhile trade-off.
I actually have to say it's incredibly enlightened for a casino to spend whatever they spend on the ball to get the people in that room to agree not to play there. You know, I mean, it must save Barona hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, every year. Absolutely. No question. And not only do the players in that room not come, the players they play with don't come. It's just say, hey, don't go down there. There's 600 casinos in America we can all go play at. Don't go to Barona. There's better, not necessarily better spots, but yeah, let's just not go down there. That would be a bit disrespectful, and it's just worked out wonderfully for Barona and for the guys at the ball.
Now, if you get in the Blackjack Hall of Fame, you get a free RFB at Barona whenever you want, but you can't play. Let's say Richard decided to take an RFB for a few days. Could he play poker there?
That's not hypothetical. Richard has taken more RFBs at Barona as a member of the Blackjack Hall of Fame than all other members of the Blackjack Hall of Fame combined. So let's say that happened. Yes. Okay, go ahead.
Could he play in the poker room?
Sure.
Yeah, and actually when I go there, I do occasionally go sit in the poker room and play, you know, 1-3 no limit. Yeah.
Okay, because there you're not competing against the house. And
Yeah.
All right. Now, we had an email to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. It was about one of the questions actually submitted by Richard. It related to when you should hit a queen two against a dealer 3, 4, 5, or 6 in a particular...
2, 3, 4, 5, or 6.
2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 in a game with particular rules. Rich, tell us about this.
Well, so the question was, you have a queen and a deuce. You're playing single deck, and you have a queen and a deuce against a dealer 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. And so, you know, the choices were always stand. The dealer has a bust card. Always hit 12 against a 2 or a 3, or hit the 10 deuce against a 2, 3, 4, or 6, but stand against the 5. And this is a question really that I would expect all of the older players to get right, and a lot of the younger players to not get right. And the reason for that is that most of the older players, when they learned to play, learned on single deck. And on single deck, there are fine points of basic strategy. And so it wasn't until Peter Griffin's book came out that players knew that a 10-2 against a 4 was a basic strategy hit. But it wasn't until Peter Griffin's book came out that it was revealed that it turns out that a 10-deuce against a 6 is a basic strategy hit on a single deck. So the correct answer was you hit it against a 2, 3, 4, or 6, but not against a 5. So the person who wrote in to ask about the question was actually Mr. Yuck, who won the blackjack ball 2 years ago.
Yes, he did.
So, yeah.
Now, Smoke, did you get this one right?
I did get that one right, surprisingly, because I haven't played much single deck, being a little younger generation, but I do faintly remember that I didn't know 100%. It wasn't 100%. It was about 20% guess, I'd say. But I was fairly confident that I remember the little exceptions of composition-dependent exceptions when I did play single deck.
Well, going by Rich's generalization, I think I'm too young to have gotten that one right. I think that's what he said. I guessed on that one and guessed wrong. Now, there was a couple questions submitted by James Grossjean, including one Monty Hall, let's make a deal problem that nobody got right. Max, do you want to set the stage on that, or what the problem was?
Sure. Well, the way that question came about, I thought about the Monty Hall question, and it was always, okay, you get to pick one, he exposes one, and so my question was, what if two people were playing? Should they both switch? And I called Mushkin, and I said, should they both switch? And he said, wait a minute, well, it depends on how you phrase it, because if you phrase it right, yes, they should both switch. And I said, that makes no sense whatsoever to me. And then I called Gross Gene, and Gross Gene being Gross Gene went into something that lasted about 2 hours, and I didn't understand a word he said. And I said, can you write that down? I have no idea what you're talking about. And he said, well, let's do 100. And we take it all the way down to there, and we have to put it in terms of EV. So what would the coin flip be? So we had to structure it in terms of what would that coin flip actually be worth. And I could have taken 50 guesses. None of them would have been the right guess. I wouldn't have had a clue.
You should explain what the question is for our audience, Max, if you remember it.
Okay. Monty Hall is there, and you've got 100 numbers.
No, like, you have 52.
You've got 100 doors.
You have 52 card deck, and you each get one card. Players get one card, and if that card happens to be an ace of diamonds, then you get $5,200. Do you want to take it from there?
Correct. Yeah, you get $5,200. So now Monty turns over 48?
No.
49
cards.
Monty turns over 49 cards and then says, you now get to flip a coin. And after you flip that coin, the question is, if you flip the coin and win, what is your EV based upon winning the coin flip? Compared to losing the coin flip. How much is that coin flip worth if you win it? And nobody got it right.
Surprised that nobody got that right, because there are quite a few guys in the room, you know, with degrees in math or advanced degrees in math. So it was kind of surprising that nobody got that right.
They were, but they have advanced degrees in math, but they are rookies at drinking, and a lot of them bring that bottle of Dom, and they're drinking, and they don't drink very often. And that's what I love, is having amateur drinkers at a professional party, because, you know, a professional drinker like a Diamond Mike, it doesn't bother him a bit to, he can chug a couple bottles of champagne, and he's just as competitive as he is sober. Well, you get a guy from MIT that's had a solid 4 beers at his bachelor party, and he drinks a bottle of champagne, he's gone. And so it did surprise me nobody got it. I thought a couple guys would, but not one person figured it out. We gave him a solid 15 seconds.
It turns out that your EV is $100 for each of the two players, because you have a 1 in 52 chance to get $5,200. And so if neither, and the EV of that last card is going to be $5,000, because if there's 49 cards that can't be it, if none of the two guys have it, that last guy has it. So it's $5,000 if you get to pick that last one in terms of EV. So the difference between picking that last one for $5,000 and your EV of $100, which is what you started with, gave the correct number of $4,900 as a difference in EV of winning the coin flip versus losing the coin flip. It makes sense to me now. It made no sense to me on that night.
Did you enjoy some adult beverages before the question?
I had strong water. I actually am not a drinker. I find the $160 bottle of champagne entry fee steep, but I will pay it every year. I enjoy that party. So
wait a minute. You don't pay for the champagne, Bob. You must get it comped.
Usually I did. This time I actually ended up paying for it. But this is the first time I've gotten it. I've paid for it. Usually I've gotten it comp, but not this year.
Oh, you should have done a selfie and sent it in. That would have been everywhere. Dancer coughs up $1.60 for a bottle of champagne. That had to be a first.
It was a first. Yeah. I'm not a drinker at all, and so good. Anyway, I'm sure everybody's feeling sorry for me. Let's go on. Now, Max, what was your favorite question this year?
Well, I have a lot of favorite questions. I love those ones with just a little twist to them that people can't remember just one little piece and they get it wrong and they boo me, and that's good. But I always like the ones that have something to do with absolutely nothing about blackjack. And I think my favorite question was, what is Rumbolium? And the options were that it's a concoction, a legal drink, and I said, if you were to have died from Rumbolium 100 years ago, what would have killed you? And one was a legal drink made of opium and rum. Another was a legal elixir made of cocaine and rum. Another one was that you took a punch to the head in a prize fight and died. And the last one was you drank too much rum. And the answer was you drank too much rum, because rum was known at the turn of the century as Rumbolium. Don't know why it changed, but I heard that on the History Channel one night, and my daughter and I were both sitting there, and they said, it was called Rumbolium, and we both looked at each other, and she said, that's a question for the blackjack ball. And I said, yes, it is. So, I love those kind of obscure questions. I only throw a couple in now. I used to do a lot more of those, but I keep getting complaints from people like Munchkin that all of the questions that aren't germane to blackjack, he doesn't think should be there. So I left it down to maybe about two this year. The other one was how much did Bruno Mars get paid for playing at the Super Bowl?
It was actually true or false that he got paid $1.
Right.
And the answer was false, because he got paid zero.
Right.
All right. Smoke, what was your question? What was your favorite question?
I kind of like the questions where there's a little math exercise, but they're not too tricky, because if they're too tricky, usually, like the Monty Hall one, I don't get it right, usually. So I like the one where I believe it's a world-class card counter playing on the six-deck game. He has a bankroll of 100K, bit in half Kelly, rounded to 250 per half percentage advantage. The running count is 12, and there are four decks remaining. The dealer has an ace up, and the pro has 9-8. The dealer ends up turning over four and hits with a 2 and then a 10. How much money should a professional card counter lose on that hand? And it was nothing, 250, 500, and 750, and I got it right at 250. I was proud of myself doing my little arithmetic on the back of the sheet there. Got that one right. So I kind of enjoyed that one where you're kind of rushed for time to do a little arithmetic, but it's not too tricky, like I said.
Now, I actually was submitted that question, and I think that many people got it right, but for the wrong reason. You know, the trick to that question was that it was a six decks hit 17 game. So you had a true three, which means you are taking insurance, so you lose the $250 insurance bet. But the the trick to it is that 17 against an ace is a basic strategy surrender on a hit 17 game. But if you have the index number for that surrender is only a true count of plus two. So if you have over a true count of plus two, you're not supposed to surrender. So, you either got it right because you knew that you were not supposed to surrender, or you got it right because you didn't know that it was supposed to be a surrender.
Unlike some of them, I did get that one right for the right reason. Some of them I did get right for the wrong reason. So.
Yeah, either way, it got a lot of booze when I gave him the answer and the logic behind it.
Yeah.
Which makes it fun. A lot of groans in the room with some of the answers this year.
Yeah, last year I got 15 out of 21 correct. And I actually won this part of the contest, which made me feel brilliant, but because I was a good guesser and got a lot of the true and the false ones right. This year, I thought the questions were tougher. I predicted the top score would be 12 or 13. One guy, David Y, got 17 correct. Nobody else got 16 or 15 or 14 or 13. Now, Smoke got 12, along with the attorney Thea Sankiewicz. She's Bob Nersessian's wife and law partner. And 11 correct, a former MIT blackjack player and current poker expert Andy Block. Also singer, songwriter, blackjack Hall of Famer, and Daryl Purpose got the 11. So those were the five. Now they had a skills contest. The first one was simply counting cards. Max gave him each a deck of 52 cards, said he had taken out between 4 and 7 cards. They're supposed to count them and figure out how many were left. And they did it in order. Or the first one down slapped the deck down. Now, beforehand, I would have bet on Darryl Purpose. He is really fast counter. And so, but actually David, the guy who got the top score, he came in first, then Darryl. Then
actually, Bob, David called me and said that he thought Darryl did beat him. And he asked some people who were watching when it happened afterwards, and they also thought that Darryl had beat him. So I guess there was some confusion, but it didn't really matter who came in first. It was
right,
because it was only who came in last got eliminated, right?
Well, I think the key with David was he slammed the table with authority, and Darryl did it very softly, and I looked over and saw that he was done, and we pointed to him again. But, you know, Darryl, he's a very soft-spoken and soft-table-slapping guy. Whereas David was pretty happy that he got there. What's amazing is watching Darryl do that, I think he can count a deck with a plus-minus count faster than he can count the number of cards.
That might be. Now, Smoke, you almost got eliminated this time.
Yeah, I dodged a bullet on that one.
Thea Sankiewicz beat you. Now, she miscounted by one, but she doesn't know one end of a blackjack deck from another. So
I don't know about that. I think she's a ringer. I think she's a little better than she leads on.
So you showed a lot of blackjack savvy later on in the contest, but on this one, not so much. What happened?
Well, basically, I didn't understand it. I was thinking of throwing Max under the bus for not explaining it well, but looking back, he explained it just fine. It was me. I had a problem understanding it. Maybe I was a little nervous because it was the first event I'd ever done on the final table. So I was trying to count with high, low, and the number of cards at the same time, hence my slowness.
That could slow you down a bit.
Yeah.
All right. The second contest was to memorize cards. Max spread out a well-shuffled deck, and the players had 30 seconds to memorize every fourth one. They kept going, announcing the cards, until one player missed. Andy Block had a senior moment and forgot a card on the second round.
Now, we should explain this, because in years past, Max would spread the deck, and you had to memorize as big a string as you could. And if somebody missed, it would keep going. So you couldn't just memorize every fourth card, because if somebody was eliminated, you had to know what the next card was. You understand the difference?
Yes.
So I guess this year you could just memorize every fourth card, but in years past, that strategy would not have worked.
Agreed.
And it hadn't even occurred to me. I was just trying to speed up the final game so we could get out of there on time, because we always run late, and hadn't even occurred to me just to memorize every fourth card. So that was the second card. Andy Block, who's not that smart, he's got a degree in electrical engineering from MIT, and he's a Harvard-trained lawyer, so you would have thought he could have remembered two cards. Andy wasn't very happy when he missed.
I have to say, the next day, I was out to lunch with Darryl, and I think David Y was also there. And Darryl, the next day, rattled off the first 15 cards in that string. You know, I mean, he still remembered them the next day.
Max, do you remember your comment to Andy when he left the table?
I'm sure it was something polite and uplifting.
It was very polite. You asked Andy to go back to MIT and ask for a refund of all the tuition that he paid to get his degree.
I told you, I don't plan those. I don't even remember them, but
that's
not a bad idea.
Okay, the next round, Max spread out another well-shuffled deck of cards. Contestants had to determine whether those particular cards, it was better to bet one hand, two hands, or three hands, starting over from scratch each time using basic strategy. They also had to bet. Yes?
Yeah, if I just pick the cards up as is, burn a card, and you bet whether you'd win the most money playing one hand, two hands, or three hands based upon the composition of that deck as it showed on the table. And you had 30 seconds to figure it out.
They also had to make a bet between $100 and $1,000, which is all they had, on their confidence level of whether they would get it correct. Turned out the correct answer was playing two hands. Daryl bet 100. Smoke bet 900. So he now had the lead. Now
you had a lot of confidence on that bet, Smoke.
I did. I was just kind of going for the high variance route, to be honest, because I figured those guys probably had me outclassed. So I was all or nothing type situation for me, kind of the kill fill approach on that one.
And
it worked.
David.
Yeah, it worked.
David bet half his stack, 500, and bet three with kind of a caveat. If you were allowed to deviate from basic strategy, three bets was the right answer. If you were forced to keep basic strategy, then two bets was the right answer. So, according to the rules, David lost it, but there was reasons why he bet three. The next round, players got to choose one of three shuffle decks. One had the ace of spades on the bottom. The other two had the five of spades on the bottom. Players then had used a cut card to cut off anywhere between 10 and 42 cards. Then they played standard blackjack. They could make any plays they wanted. And when that cut card came out, it was over. They had to bet at least one-fourth of their stack along the process. Now, Smoke, you got to cut first. You chose the one with the ace of spades. How did you attack this one?
I attacked it by doing what I had done in real life a few times, actually. So I know from real life experience it's a lot easier to do that technique with an ace than it is with a five, you know, to put an ace in your own hand rather than a five in the dealer's hand. So I just got lucky that I had had the lead and was able to make the choice and chose. I think the other guys would have chosen an ace, too.
Well, so
well, but also now you now how many did you try to cut?
Yeah, I tried to cut it real thin. I tried to I got it. I nailed it. I got 13. And that's what I was trying to do, actually. So I'm not great at that, but I was lucky that day on it.
Well, you had it, so it turned out you gave yourself a little bit of leeway. You bet 1,000 on the first hand and 500 on the second. And you got the ace on the first hand. It turned
we should say this is on the third round. He
played the third round.
12 cards in the first two rounds.
Right. And he got a six and a three on the other hand. And Max shows an eight up. So obviously he's going to hit the six and three. And then somehow Max had a senior moment. And he turned the whole card up. So now David's looking at a hard nine versus a dealer hard 16. So David said, I think
Smoke,
I'm going to double.
Smoke said that.
The names wrong. Smoke said, I think I'm going to double, which is obviously correct. And then Max luck-sacked into getting a 21. So David lost out on his clever play there. But then Max said, well, there's two other guys to go. So for all of them, I'm going to do double exposure on the third round so that nobody has a disadvantage here. Now it's David's turn. David is in third place because he and so he figures with double exposure with the rules that they have, that's his biggest advantage. So he's going to cut the five out of play so it doesn't show up. He's going to bet as little as he can until the third round, and then he'll bet everything he has, which is probably appropriate strategy.
Well, no, I disagree. I mean, first of all, he has to get ahead of Daryl. And so, I mean, two things. I think it can't hurt to cut the five into play, you know, because some knowledge is better than no knowledge. But also, I think he had to bet a little more on the first two rounds leading up to the round where he's going to have an exposed hole card, just because I think he had to get ahead of Daryl. So, but anyway, yeah, so he bet small on the first two rounds and then bet it all on that last hand where he knew Max was going to expose the hole card.
And sure enough, he got dealt a 20, which was a nice score, except Max is on a roll and got a 21. So
I have an ace up, but he bet all his money and couldn't take insurance. And I have the 10 in the hole, and he's gone. So we didn't even play the final game.
All right.
Of that round. Yeah.
But he didn't have to. So we moved in. He was out, and we went right to the finals.
All right. In the finals, you had to count cards. Actually, we don't have enough time to describe it completely. Briefly, there was a card counting exercise. They had to count down half a deck. Daryl smoked smoke.
Yeah.
Daryl,
I was a little faster that time, but still, Daryl still smoked me, though.
And then when he won that, Daryl had to play a tricky hand against a stacked deck that Max stacked and needed to know the rules of Barona's double deck games to get it correct. Now, Daryl's not allowed within the same zip code as Barona, but Max did casually mention the relevant rule that Barona has surrender on their double deck games sometime earlier in the evening. It seemed,
first question of the night.
It seemed like a throwaway comment at the time that Max was just talking and not saying anything, but it turned out to be critical. Max lost, or so Daryl did not surrender as he should have had he known that rule, and so that made Smoke the champion. As personal preference, I would have liked to see each player have to make these tricky decisions until one player makes it and the other one doesn't. That's a personal preference. I don't get a vote, but that's what I would think. So, Smoke, you won against a pretty strong final table. How do you feel about that?
Feels good. I mean, I think the competition is good because it reflects kind of what most pros do in their everyday life. It's a mixture of skill and luck. I think skill outweighs luck in the long run, but in the short run, anything can happen. I got lucky on that night, so I was happy. I mean, I did a great job. I'm not trying to be fake humble or anything. I know I did good, but I think I also did get lucky, too. So I'll count my blessings and then count my skills, too.
Did you own any piece of yourself?
I did not. I did not own. I bid on a couple people, but then the bidding got too high. I would have lost anyway, obviously. So,
so you took.
I'm glad I got outbid.
you took home a trophy and nothing else.
That's right. That's right. That's. I'm fine with that, though.
Next year, are you going to buy a piece of yourself?
I think the price on me might be a little too high next year.
Not to buy 20% of yourself. It won't be too high.
That's true.
Yeah, there's always value too. That's we have everybody contribute $20 into the Calcutta pool before we start the bidding. So there's always value in the pool.
And yeah,
that helped drive the bidding. So there's always close to $2,000 extra EV in that pool before we make the first bet. So you'll have value next year, Smoke, by yourself. You can put in a bid
okay.
Now. Maybe we should have a silent auction online before the Blackjack ball. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, I think I just heard Smoke bid $1,200 for himself for next year, Max. So you can go ahead and write that down. All right, let's do some commercials. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else has. Every Thursday is Senior Slot Tournament Day, where $5,200 is given away weekly. Double points will be Monday, February 17th, President's Day, no limit, midnight to midnight. In February, they're having 4 gift giveaways. You must play 500 video poker points Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, and then come back and pick up your gift Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. The second gift for which you can earn points this Saturday is a pizza stone set. This next week's free video poker class is double bonus at noon and double-double bonus at 2 p.m., with both classes being at the introductory level. One of the big advantages of taking these classes is that they have different returns for flushes and straights relative to each other, and you'll see how the strategy differs when one of those changes is made. This helps you learn strategies of other games. At the Palms, they completely reformatted the weekend drawings. In February, it'll be Friday only, 7 p.m. You may earn an unlimited number of tickets, 10 winners each Friday night, total of $10,000 given away. 5 times entries Friday and Saturday evenings, 8 to midnight, 2 times entries Sunday and Tuesdays. And you're also a guaranteed winner. If you swipe on Friday and don't win, you'll have $10 free play on your card Saturday between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. Play, Earn, and Win Monday, Wednesday, Friday. For the first half of February, you may earn Palms gift cards. At videopoker.com, it remains the best place to practice a wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, many others. Often these games are the best returning games in a casino, and you need practice to make sure you know how to play. They no longer have the daily contest, but rather weekly contests where you have a choice of three games. This week, you can compete in Ultimate X, Dream Card, or Cleopatra Kino. I'm sure that's going to be Munchkin's favorite. All right. Our guest next week will be surveillance expert Vinny DiCarlo. Munchkin, tell us about him, please.
Vinny DiCarlo is a guy who wrote a book called How to Beat Casino Surveillance. He's been around the casino business for like 30 years, working in all different aspects. So he'll be on. Definitely send us your questions about surveillance. You know, he'll be here to answer them. And yeah, should make for an interesting show.
All right. In 2 weeks, we're going to have a return visit by UNLV professor David G. Schwartz, who has written a book called Roll the Bones. This is a history of casino gambling from way back when up to the current day. Now, Smoke, how did you come by that unusual name, Smoke?
It's a long story. I basically am known as a guy that I can be on a table in 1 second, and then you turn your head and you don't see me the next second. I know one guy that's better than me at that, but I think I'm a close second best.
So it's Smoke because you disappear in a cloud of smoke.
That's right.
Yeah. Interesting. So. Now, Max, at the final table this year, there were none of the unusual things. We have 2 minutes. Like in the past, you've had arm wrestling. You've had putting golf balls. You've had throwing cards into a hat. You've had stacking chips with one hand. Now, there was none of that. You actually emphasized blackjack skills. Was this a momentary lapse, or is this the way it's going to be in the future?
I thought it was a momentary lapse, but I got so many complaints when I asked Munchkin and James Grosstein to help me out this year, and they... Munchkin particularly had written that he thought some of those things were silly. I actually think they're quite fun to watch a guy such as a John Chang, or not going to throw out any names, but other Hall of Famers that are used to betting multiple hands of 10,000, and we ask him to shuffle chips for a $100 trophy, and they start trembling like a chihuahua with a bladder problem. And
I have to say, everybody I talk to really like this new streamlined format. I mean, because we got done a lot earlier, the whole thing went a lot faster, and people really seem to like that.
Any chance, Max, that Richard and Munch and James can get back in the contest with some sort of penalty, like maybe they get penalized one question for every year they won, something like that?
Possibly. We thought about putting a spot on it, but then when they get to the final table, they kill everybody anyway. So we may do something like that. It might be pretty funny if they went off at -3 or -4 questions.
Yeah, and it could extend it to everybody. And so, like, sorry, Smoke. You have Smoke -1 because he's 1-1. All right, so now we are out of time. Thank you, Max. Thank you, Smoke. Richard, go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.